This is the Perfectly Mentored Podcast with your host, Jason Portnoy. Yeah.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Perfectly Mentored. I'm your host, Jason Portnoy. My guest today is Benton Crane from Harmon Brothers. If you haven't heard of Harmon Brothers, they're literally the leading force behind some of the most viral ads you've seen on the internet, from Squatty Potty to Poopery to Chatbooks, that unicorn that's pooing rainbow ice cream. Millions and millions and millions of views and millions of revenue generated from the genius that the Harmon Brothers have produced, and Benton Crane is the leading force behind it all. You're not going to want to miss this one. Benton, welcome. Thank you so much for doing this. Welcome to the show.
Hey, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So for the listeners, let's get a little insight to your background, your entrepreneurial journey, call it, and how you became the CEO of Harmon Brothers.
Sure, no problem. You know, my entrepreneurial journey actually started at a really young age. I grew up, my parents were farmers, and in the 1980s and 1990s, kind of the mantra in farming was either you have to grow big and become like this big industrialized farm, or you go broke. That was kind of a transition where not many family farms survived the 80s and 90s. And my parents, they kind of saw the writing on the wall. And so they left the farm, and we moved to the city so my dad could go to college to try to, you know, start over and build a new career. And that ended up being a pretty rough road for him. And so, I grew up where, you know, my family didn't have much. And if I wanted something, I had to earn it. And so, I remember learning how to bake bread and then starting to sell that door to door. And that was like, 9 years old or something. And so nobody could tell me no, when a little kid shows up on the doorstep with bread that they baked, the answer was always like, yes, yes. And so that was, that was a pretty good way to, to start my business venture, with something that, while there was some work that went into it, the sales part of it was easy. And then my cousins, who are the Harmons, who the Harmon Brothers agency is named after, they grew up in Idaho. I grew up in Utah and they were in Idaho, and their dad got a job down in Utah. And so they started coming down to Utah on a weekly basis, and they would load up the station wagon with boxes of potatoes from the farms up in Idaho. And they'd bring them down, and we'd stick them in my parents' garage, and then we would ride our bikes around the neighborhood and sell Idaho potatoes to all my neighbors. And then we'd put them in the red wagon and drag the wagon around the neighborhood. And that went so well for us. I think that started when we were like 11-year-olds or something. It went so well for us that we kept doing it year after year. And by the time we were teenagers, Jeff, my cousin, he had bought a 15-passenger Ford van that he would fill to the brim with potatoes and bring those things down. And then we would, we'd take those all over the neighborhood and really all over the valley and sell potatoes door to door. And, that's how we were able to pay for college. And, we served missions for our church. I went to Portugal for a couple of years. He went to Ireland for a couple of years. And we were able to fund that through our potato selling. That's kind of where the entrepreneurial journey started. That served us really well once we got into, internet video. Poopery was our first campaign together, and people don't really realize it, but yes, while we hired comedians to make it super funny and make it shareable and enjoyable and all of that, we also used all of those sales principles that we developed, knocking doors for all those years as kids. And that kind of ended up becoming our MO, where we combine these two worlds of like really convincing sales structure with really fun and entertaining, comedy and humor and visuals and all that stuff. And you blend those two worlds together, and it makes for a really, really powerful combination. And that's the foundation that we've built Harmon Brothers on. And so now, you know, fast forward a few years and we've done Squatty Potty and Poopery and Purple Mattresses and Chapbooks and Fiber Fix and Lumi deodorant, and the list goes on and on. And we've just been so blessed to work with amazing clients and drive, you know, billions of views and hundreds of millions of dollars in sales. And it's just been a fantastic ride.
You said something really interesting that you combine, you know, comedy and sales tactics. Do you find that a lot of, when it comes to social media advertising or online advertising now, people throw out real world sales tactics? Like they do everything that would never work in real life, hoping that it would work online.
You know, I've kind of found that they take it to one extreme or the other, where it's like, I'm just going to like pitch you nonstop, where it's just like sell, 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 come on, hurry, buy my stuff while supplies last, you know, hurry, click the button now. It almost feels like a used car commercial or like a, you know, old school infomercial where it's just pressure, 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 sales, sales, sales. They either go that way or they're just like, they forget all about the sales, like you were mentioning, and they go kind of this other way of like, let's just be funny. Let's just be fun. And I don't know why, but they kind of forget that you can combine those two worlds. And if you entertain people, they kind of forget that they're even being pitched. It doesn't feel like they're being pressured or that they're being sold to. It's just a natural part of what they're learning or what they're viewing. And the entertainment makes it enjoyable along the way.
I agree. No one likes ads, and I'm in the ad industry, right? So no one likes ads, but they'll stop if it's entertaining or you solve a problem for them.
So, I mean, I would push back on that. There's millions of people who watch the Super Bowl just for the ads.
But from an from an entertaining perspective, right? So they remember the entertaining ones.
That's exactly right. And the companies who get to advertise in the Super Bowl have the luxury that they're big enough brands and they have big enough budgets that they can be entertaining without having to worry about the immediate sales. Whereas most of us small business owners, we don't get that luxury. You know, we can't afford to just be fun and entertaining. We have to get sales or else we go out of business. And so that's where combining those worlds makes perfect sense, is, you know, we can entertain, give you something of value, but we can also sell to you at the same time.
So now walk me through post-university all the way to Harmon Brothers. Was it like instantaneous? You guys left college and you're like, cool, we're ready to start this business? Or you each went on your way, took different jobs? What was that like?
Yeah, we kind of went in different directions. So Jeff Harmon and I, we were college roommates. Like we're a month apart in age. And so we grew up best buddies. You know, we went on our first dates within, you know, a few weeks of each other, and
different girl. And, I hope.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
yeah. So we were best buddies, college roommates, all of that stuff. But then I got engaged my last semester of college. And so I got married straight out of college. And so immediately I needed like a steady income, you know, I needed a real job, so to speak. And that was right as kind of the 2008, you know, financial collapse happened. And so I interviewed at jobs all over the country, and I ended up only getting one legitimate offer, and that was at the U.S. Census Bureau, it was kind of a soul sucking job and a soul sucking place for me. But I felt like at that point, you know, I had to do it. And so meanwhile, Jeff, you know, he in one of his final classes, he met a guy named Dr. Bob, who had invented this thing called the Aura Brush, which was a tongue cleaner that gets rid of bad breath. And Dr. Bob had paid for an infomercial, spent like $40,000 on an infomercial. And from that, he generated like 8 sales or something like that. It was just a total bust. And so he took it to this college class. It was a marketing class or something, to see if he could get some fresh ideas from the students. And this group of students took it on as their term project or whatever. And at the end of the project, they came back and reported, okay, well, our research shows that only 8% of people would be interested in buying something like this online. So we think that you should scrap it and do something else. And Jeff Harmon, sitting in the back of the classroom, he perks up and he raises his hand and he's like, 8% of people is millions and millions of people. Why wouldn't you just focus on them? And Dr. Bob's like, can I see you after class? And so Dr. Bob and Jeff met, and I think at that point, Dr. Bob was kind of out of cash. And so he traded an old motorcycle. He gave Jeff this motorcycle in exchange for Jeff helping him out. And Jeff created this 2.5-minute ad to run on YouTube, which this was like, you have to keep in mind, Google had just barely purchased YouTube. And so YouTube wasn't even an advertising platform yet. It was just something that Google was trying to turn YouTube into. And this idea of a 2.5-minute ad was unheard of. Like, either you do your 30-second or your 60-second that runs on TV, or you do a whole infomercial. Those were the options back then. And so Jeff makes this 2.5-minute ad, and everyone, including myself, was like, dude, that's not going to work. 2.5 minutes doesn't work. No one's going to pay attention to a 2.5-minute ad. And he was like, look, that's how much time it takes to properly sell this thing. That's how much time it takes to convince somebody that the Aura Brush is awesome and that they should buy it. And so he actually reached out to YouTube and asked, can you give me a skip button so that if people like this ad, they can watch it. And if they don't want to watch it, they can skip it and go on to whatever video they want. And YouTube, you know, they were in startup mode. And so they're like, yeah, sure. Well, you know, we'll experiment with it. We'll try anything. And of course, fast forward to today, like the skip button is like a core part of the platform. And in fact, I would even argue that that was an innovation that changed the whole advertising industry in seismic type ways, because it shifted the power from the advertisers to the viewers. Now advertisers are forced to make something that, you know, that the viewer wants to watch. But anyways, back to the story. So, you know, Jeff launched that ad, and at the time nobody was advertising on YouTube. And so they were able to buy up ad inventory from YouTube for less than a penny per view. It was like, you know, a fraction of a penny per view. And so they start getting this incredible return on ad spend. And so they just start cranking this thing up. And before they knew it, they were the number three brand on all of YouTube, behind only Old Spice, which that was when they had, you know, the man your man could smell like. And so they had just blown up. They were the number one. And then Pepsi was the number two. I can't remember for certain, but I think that was back when like Pepsi was doing the Super Bowl commercials, and they would use like Britney Spears and Shakira and that sort of thing to have like, you know, sexy Pepsi musician or whatever. And it was a pretty big thing for them. And so then Aura Brush, this tiny little startup, was the number three brand after Old Spice and Pepsi. And that blew up Aura Brush. It took them from tiny little startup to, you know, Walmart picked them up, CVS, Walgreens. They got nationwide distribution, sold millions and millions of dollars. And then they ended up getting acquired by Dentec. And that was the point where our paths reconnected, because Jeff left to do the Poopery campaign, and he needed a data geek. And so I joined up to be the data geek, because I kind of had my nose in spreadsheets for several years and was doing data analysis. And then, so Poopery was our first campaign together, and it was our first, as Harmon Brothers. And then the ball got rolling from there. So the other two brothers, Daniel and Neil, they were a part of that as well. And then we co-founded VidAngel, which is a video streaming platform. We all worked on that for about a year. And then we started kind of running out of cash there. It was pretty hard in the beginning. And so we split up, and Daniel and I went and focused on making ads again. Neil and Jeff stayed focused on building VidAngel. And one of the ads we worked on was Squatty Potty. That one took off, blew up, and then it went into Purple Mattresses and Chatbooks. And so we just kept running in parallel paths. And so to this day, Neil and Jeff run VidAngel, and Daniel and I run the ad agency.
Love it. So, I mean, you named a ton of viral hits. So let's talk about creating viral content, because that's what every brand wants to do. Every brand always says, I want to produce that viral piece of content. Yet so few people could, or can, I should say. But Harmon Brothers has hit after hit. What's the secret?
Well, let's unpack that question just a little bit. So, you know, people do come to us all the time. Hey, we want a viral video. Can you make us a viral video? And we get called viral marketers all the time, right? But when you actually think about what virality means, basically the definition is when something spreads on its own. There's nothing pushing it. It just spreads, quote unquote, virally. In technical terms, we use a term that we call the viral coefficient. And the way the viral coefficient works is that if every view results in more than one additional view, then that means your viral coefficient is above one. If, let's say, if every view results in 0.5 more views, then your viral coefficient would be 0.5. And so a viral coefficient over one means that you're truly viral, meaning it's spreading on its own. There's nothing pushing it. It's just going. A viral coefficient under one means that it's not spreading on its own means. It's not accelerating. And so it has to have something else pushing it to go. That's getting kind of technical. And so, like, I won't belabor the technical definition too much, but the idea here is that very, very rarely and very few times does something ever go truly viral where the viral coefficient is above one, meaning that it's spreading on its own, it's just taking off, it's going like wildfire. And the few cases where that does happen, you know, we've been lucky enough that it's happened on a handful of ours. So Squatty Potty went truly viral, Poopery went truly viral, FiberFix went truly viral. Lumi went truly viral. You know, it's happened a handful of times for us. But the interesting thing is that, you know, quote unquote, true virality, it only lasts for a very short amount of time. It's usually days or maybe a week or two at max. And so if you're looking at, you know, your view chart, it's going to be this big spike. And then the spike comes back down to earth. And then, you know, you end up just kind of back down at a baseline. And so if you look at Squatty Potty, for instance, it's been called the most viral ad in the history of the internet. Whether or not that's true, I don't know, it might be. But I think at this point it's been viewed over, like, I'd say probably over 300 million times or something like that. Probably coming up on 350 million or somewhere in that neighborhood. And being one of the most viral ads in history, I would guess that not more than 10% of those views are actual viral views, meaning, you know, maybe 20, 25, 30 million tops are the actual viral views. And all the rest of those actually came through a very methodical strategy, a distribution strategy that includes paid media. It includes, you know, email marketing, influencer marketing, all of these other methods of distribution. And those just amplified it in a way that never would have happened if we just relied on, hey, let's just be viral marketers. Another example, Purple Mattresses. That Goldilocks campaign that we did for Purple Mattresses, it's been viewed over 500 million times. It's one of the single most successful ads that I'm aware of. Like, definitely, I don't think in the mattress industry has ever had a single ad probably more successful than that one, to the best of my knowledge. And that one didn't go viral at all. Like, it was not a viral ad campaign. In fact, it was pretty slow out of the gate, and it had to be pushed the whole entire time. But because those ads sell, it means that you can use them to generate a dollar and then reinvest that dollar back into more ads. And you create this flywheel that can just build and build and build. And so you end up creating these campaigns that get hundreds of millions of views, and people see them and think that's virality, but it actually isn't. It's just a really effective ad that both entertains and it sells. And then that allows you to invest, you know, a dollar in, and you get dollars back out. And so you can keep reinvesting and building and building and building. And they end up being these massive campaigns.
Well, I appreciate the honesty there, because some people would be like, oh yeah, we're viral hits. But I mean, very few people will sit there and say, yeah, but there's a distribution strategy behind every single one of those things for the most part.
Well, and like, let's go back to that viral coefficient. I know it's kind of technical and geeky, but we always want some component of viral coefficient built in, meaning like, if you get a viral coefficient of 0.2, which would mean that for every view you get an additional 0.2 views through the shares. That means that all of your ad buying is now, it's on sale. It's 20% off of whatever your competitors are paying. And so it allows you to be much more aggressive in your ad buying and your distribution strategy. And so don't get me wrong. I mean, we want shareability. We want virality to be part of it. But this whole idea that I need a viral video, that's not really how you want to look at it. Instead, you want to say, I want a very effective sales and branding campaign that people happen to like. And so they share it with each other. And so that builds some virality into it. But I'm not going to bank on this thing just going viral and spreading on its own.
So let's talk about that, because you have a lot of clients that come to you, and I would guess with your success, it's not, you know, a regular freelancer creating videos for you. Brands need to have a budget to come work with Harman Brothers. So what can the brands on a smaller budget learn from what you do for bigger brands with big budget clients, I should say, and how to apply it to their business?
Yeah, great question. I feel like, this is my personal opinion, I think every entrepreneur and every business should have the goal of eventually becoming a household brand, meaning a brand that everyone knows, they love, they trust, they remember. And the reason I believe that that should be a goal for every entrepreneur is because if you don't have that goal, and if you're not working towards that, then you can end up, I love to use the example of Snuggie, which Snuggie was this crazy, crazy successful infomercial. Depending on the source you look at, they sold somewhere between $300 and $500 million worth of Snuggies, like crazy numbers. But yet they never bothered to build a brand. They never took any of that, you know, revenue that they were generating and used it to build a brand. And so they had this very short kind of run in the sun, or I don't know what it was, a 3 to a 5 year window or whatever. And then they just faded into obscurity. And fast forward to today, and you go ask any teenager if they've heard of Snuggie, nobody's heard of Snuggie. You know, you ask people if they have a Snuggie in their house, and most don't. But if they had built a brand, and that brand, it would have ended up becoming memorable and loved, and they would have developed a product or a family of products around that brand. And today, you know, everyone's home would have, you know, various Snuggie products in it, and all the, you know, kids and teenagers and everyone would know what Snuggie is. But that's not the case. It didn't happen that way. And it's because they weren't thinking about how to build a brand. And so with that in mind, back to your original question of what can young entrepreneurs and young brands learn from what we've done for these bigger brands, just think of it as a timeline where you're starting out in obscurity, you're starting out in startup world where no one knows about you, no one's heard of you, no one remembers you, people don't trust you yet. And you've got to get from there to becoming like a Nike or an Apple or, you know, name the household brand, right? Where everyone knows you, everyone trusts you, everyone remembers you, all of that sort of thing. And that path to get there, it starts out very, very focused on sales. And over time, it gets more and more and more focused on being on the brand side of it, being memorable, being funny, being likable, connecting it emotionally, to the point where a Nike or an Apple, you will never see a Nike or an Apple do a sales pitch. It's just not going to happen. You're not going to hear Nike be like, hurry, while supplies last. You know, click now to get this additional free offer. They don't do that anymore. You know, they probably did back in their early days, back when Phil Knight was out pounding the pavement, going from shoe store to shoe store. Like, he was in full sales mode, you know, full pitch mode. And that's changed over time, because now he's in branding mode. You know, it's all about the brand, the emotion, the making it memorable, making it entertaining, all those sort of things. And so if you think about that as a spectrum of right now, as a young small business, I have to focus on sales. But as I get better and better at that, I'm going to start thinking more and more and more about, how do I make it memorable? How do I create the brand? How do I make it funny or heartwarming or whatever it is that I'm going for, so that over time I keep shifting more and more and more towards that. And so, well, the campaigns that you've seen us do for Squatty Potty and Poopery and Chatbooks and all these other ones, they're kind of like smack in the middle of that spectrum, right? They still very much need the sales. You know, they're not huge businesses. They're not household brand names yet. And so we still pitch, you know, we'll take people through, here's your problem, here's your solution. Let's build some credibility. Let's overcome concerns. Let's make you an offer, you know, all those things that are involved in sales. But now we're also layering on top of it everything that makes a brand awesome, you know, brand character, brand promise, brand voice, brand universe, all of those elements. And so I would say to any young entrepreneur or any young company, focus on the sales. That's totally okay to be there. Like, if you got a hard pitch, hard pitch. Do what you have to do to get those sales in the door, pay the bills, build that economic engine. But as soon as you're able to, start shifting that thinking and just keep gradually shifting that thinking until eventually one day you'll end up a household brand.
So here's, I love that answer, but I want to play off that a little bit, because you've managed to make weird, taboo, or seemingly mundane things interesting, right? That's one of the geniuses behind the work that you guys do. So Squatty Potty, Poopery, Chatbooks, which I actually think Chatbooks is the best commercial you guys have done. I know we've talked about this on another podcast. I actually think there could be a whole video marketing class taught on just that commercial, from just how everything goes and everything plays, of resetting attention and transitional selling, all these different things that went on in there. It's just genius.
Thank you.
So, I mean, like, you managed to make all those things seem interesting. So what's the recipe in doing that? Cause I'm sure, like, the listeners who are like, okay, cool, I get it. I need to be more brand. I need to put out more funny, but what I do isn't entertaining or fun.
So when we did Poopery, it was interesting because they, if I remember correctly, before our campaign launched, they were on track to do about $7 million that year. That was 2013, if my memory serves correctly.
Was this? Sorry, go.
And they had kind of this love group, mostly women who had found the product and they loved the product. But they were so embarrassed to talk about it. And so they would hide it in their purse. They would hide it, you know, under the bathroom counter, anything to avoid having a conversation about it. And so when we went into that campaign, we started asking ourselves, how can we make it safe for people to talk about Poo-Pourri? Because it's obviously a great product. It works. It's, you know, it's benefiting people in enormous ways. How do we get people to openly talk about that? Because when you have something that awesome, people need to talk about it. And so the idea was that if we could find the last person on earth who would talk about poo stink and make poo jokes, and then if we could make it okay for that person, then the idea was that it would then become okay for you and me. And that's why we ended up developing that character that is kind of this proper, posh, almost aristocratic British woman. You know, this is someone who you would expect to see more at like a Jane Austen type aristocratic party, tea party, ball, you know, whatever it is. That's where you would expect to see this character. And then we're going to take that character and we're going to put her in this position where she's talking about her poo stink, and she's going to be bold in talking about it, but she's also going to joke about it and make it light and, you know, make it not a big deal. And the hypothesis like played out perfectly, and it ended up being this thing where all of a sudden, not only did it become safe to talk about, but it became like popular to talk about, you know, Poo-Pourri. And all of a sudden it went from something that people were hiding in their purse to now they're talking about it at the dinner table with their family and their friends. And now they're pulling it out of the bathroom cabinet and setting it right on top of the toilet for everyone to see and for everyone to use, because we made it safe for them. And then you fast forward a year or two and Squatty Potty comes along. Squatty Potty had seen what we did for Poo-Pourri and they were mad that they didn't find us first. They were like, that should have been us. And they came to us. And initially my reaction was like, oh, one, I don't want to do another poop product. And two, the biomechanics of pooping, which is what Squatty Potty addresses, is like a bazillion times more disgusting than the smell of it. And so I'm just like, oh man, no way. I don't want to touch this. But it was actually Jeff Harmon. He was walking to work one day and he just had like this moment of inspiration where he was asking himself what a metaphor for poop would be. And he was thinking like, how can I make it safe? You know, it's that same idea that from Poo-Pourri of like, you know, this product is an awesome product. It's changing people's lives, but it's mostly like 55 plus year old women who are dealing with constipation. And so they get one of these things because it's life changing for them and it helps them, but they stick it in the master bedroom or master bathroom so that no one else will see it, you know, because they don't want to talk to anyone about that. And so Jeff is asking himself, how do we make this safe? And he started trying to think of metaphors for poop. And he came up with this idea of like ice cream, which is like safe, delicious, beautiful. And he's like, look, if we can take you out of this world of gross, you know, where everything is stinky and nasty, and bring you from that world into this world where everything is just delicious and safe, then maybe we can make it safe for people to talk about. And so that was the initial kind of inspiration that started that. And then it started kind of this whole chain of experimentation where we started asking ourselves, what does the poop come out of? And we did a whole bunch of experimentation and quickly found that it can't be anything that's grounded in reality, because anything that's grounded in reality is gross. And so that's where, you know, we had to bring in the unicorn, because it had to be, you know, fantastical. But even then, we thought that we were going to build this unicorn ice cream machine on the back of a truck and take it to New York City and like park it on a street corner like a food truck, and then we were going to serve people soft serve ice cream coming out of the butt of this like Clydesdale unicorn. That's what we thought we were building around. But the more like we experimented and tested, like even that, like now hindsight's always 20/20, but you look back at that and you're like, yeah, that was a terrible idea. That would have been disgusting. But one of our writers, Dave Vance, came up with this idea of, well, what if the spokesperson is this prince, so that then we can, you know, take you even further out of reality. We can put you into fairy tale land. And then that's where the castle and, you know, make-believe land all came in to, and the end result ended up being this thing where your ears are hearing all of these like terribly disgusting things, but everything your eyes see is removing you from reality. It's putting you into a safe space, making it, you know, desirable, if you will. And the same impact happened there as what happened with Poopery, where not only did it become safe to talk about, it became fun to talk about. All of a sudden people are like, "Ooh, I want to put this in my guest bathroom." Yeah. And you get, you know, college dorms who are, you know, putting squatty potties, out in the, you know, in the bathrooms of the dorms, because all of a sudden it's cool, it's fun, and it becomes the white elephant gift of, you know, that lasted for several years, where it's like the most popular white elephant gift. And the unicorn became, you know, I think we launched, it was like in August or something, and already that October and Halloween, we were seeing unicorn costumes, you know, at Halloween all over the place. And then poop emojis started getting popular, and unicorn toys and rainbow poop started showing up in toy stores and cupcake stores, and just, you know, all over the place. It just really took off in pop culture.
So, I mean, one of the things that I believe in is you can't fix what you don't measure. So you being, I guess, a statistician when you first started your career, how is that analytical, numbers focused mindset help you deliver results for your clients? Or I guess, or even more so, what advice do you have for the listeners on how they best should measure their results?
It looks like we had a bit of a technical hiccup there. I lost you halfway through that question.
Yeah, no problem. I was saying that, like, that you were a statistician when you first started off, right? So
yep.
I'm curious, how is that analytical, numbers focused, numbers driven mind, numbers first mindset really helped you and Harmon Brothers deliver results for your clients? But at the same time, like I said, I'm a big believer in you can't fix what you don't measure. So what advice do you have for the listeners on how they should best be tracking things?
Yeah, that's a great question. So yeah, a lot of people don't realize it, but if you pull back the curtains at Harmon Brothers, you see that there's kind of this cycle that is constantly happening, like over and over and over again, hundreds, thousands of times, where it's like, come up with an idea, find a way to test the idea, look at whatever results you're getting from that, and let it inform the next idea, and on and on and on. And so when you look at our track record and our campaigns, if you're not aware of what's happening behind the curtains, sometimes it's kind of like, and how, you know, how do they do it? They keep hitting it, you know, they keep getting all these hits, and our track record's not perfect, but it's really, really good. And once you understand that methodology that's happening behind the scenes, you realize, oh, using that method, you can't guarantee success, but boy, you can sure maximize your chances of success by following that pattern of you know, idea, you know, figure out a way to test it, and then see what the data is telling you, and then let that inform the next thing over and over and over again. And now, granted, we think about that a little bit differently than most, you know, digital marketers or most performance marketers, if you will. There are a lot of performance marketers who just kind of believe that, you know, the data is the end all be all, if you will, where it's like, we're going to follow the data, and the data is going to lead us to success. But we actually have a saying around here where we say that blindly following the data always leads to spam. And you can see that manifest itself in so many ways. Like if you see advertisers who are like resorting to things like, one great trick to end belly fat, or you see them using like cleavage thumbnails, to attract more clicks, or, you know, that type of thing. Once you get into like the clickbait, that world, you know, they've just followed the data blindly until they've ended up there. And while that's a good short-term strategy, meaning you're going to see short-term results from it, it's a terrible long-term branding strategy. And so that's why earlier in the interview, I mentioned how important I think it is that everyone have that, that end goal of becoming a household brand, because that allows you, it gives you a way to push back against the data sometimes. You know, if the data is saying, hey, you should use, cleavage thumbnails, then you can be like, well, does that actually contribute to, you know, the brand that I want to build and the brand that I want to become? And so another thing that is often said around here, Daniel says this all the time, is sales first, art second, but it's a very close second, meaning the art is almost just as important as the sale. And so that's kind of the balance that we try to use, is we're like, yes, we always need to measure and we always need to be looking at the data, and we have that data inform our decisions and our creative process going forward. But we never just blindly follow that to the point where we end up with spam.
Got it.
Hey, I just realized my battery's running low.
So I'll wrap up with this, and I'm curious because there's a lot of changes that are happening, especially on the performance marketing side, Facebook, and a lot of different things that are happening right now. What does the future of marketing look like to you?
So earlier we talked about, you know, when Jeff collaborated with YouTube to get that skip button put in place, that rocked the world of a lot of advertisers. You know, this idea that like, hey, I go to all the effort to make this ad and then put it out there and people can just skip it. That was kind of a scary proposition for advertisers, because prior to that, you know, I have a captive audience. I'll put in front of them whatever I want to put in front of them. But it shifted the balance of power towards the viewer. And it allowed the viewer to self-select and show, hey, I'm willing to give my time to this ad, but not to this ad. And so it forced the advertisers to think more empathetically about what they're putting in front of the viewers and think about giving viewers something that they want to watch. And I believe that one little shift was probably of the last decade, probably the single most impactful thing that happened to the advertising industry, because it fundamentally changed the type of ads being produced. And, you know, looking forward, time will tell, but I suspect the changes that we're going through right now, you know, particularly speaking of iOS 14 and the limitations that are being put in place on ad tracking, the cross-platform measurement, all of that stuff. I my personal opinion is that we're seeing another shift where power is being taken away from advertisers and it's being given to viewers. You know, the viewers still have the optionality to where if they want to opt in, they can still share, they can make it possible to be tracked if they want more personalized ads, if they want, you know, more highly targeted ads, they can opt into that. But ultimately, it's the viewer's decision. And so naturally, there's advertisers all over the world right now who are really scared. They're really nervous about this. You know, this is a big change where they've been very reliant on, you know, that granular tracking, you know, that granular targeting. And so much of that is being taken away from them. And so it makes them scared. It makes them nervous. But at the end of the day, I genuinely believe that this is going to favor the advertisers who are thinking empathetically about the viewer. And they're asking themselves, how do I give the viewer something that they want, something that they voluntarily give their time to, something that they voluntarily share, comment, interact with, you know, all of those things. I think those type of advertisers are going to end up, you know, doing just fine and still being able to reach the audiences that they need to reach. Granted, it's going to change, you know, that things are different for everyone, but I think advertisers who have that mentality and that attitude towards it are going to find new opportunities in this. And I suspect that the online experience for viewers is going to get better because of this. I feel like the past couple of years, we've kind of ended up in this dynamic where our social feeds have gotten really, really full of like hyper-targeted, very direct sales, you know, pitch in your face. Our feeds have really gotten full of that. And this is going to allow for things to start to shift back to where our feeds start to be full of more things where people are trying to entertain us, trying to put a smile on our face, trying to give us something to laugh about, trying to give us something to share. And the advertisers that succeed at that are going to be the most successful with these changes.
I totally agree with you. I think we're going to see a lot of people who were relying on the latest hacks or pushing buttons and hyper-targeting. We've been spoiled in the last few years as digital marketers. We're going to start seeing that go away a little bit. And real marketers who understand how to build a journey or how to build a brand, they're going to persevere. Benton, thank you so much for doing this. For people who want to reach out to you, they want to learn more, or maybe they want to work with Harman Brothers, how can they find you?
We've got lots of options depending on where you're at in your business. If you just want to kind of keep in touch with us and be part of the story, check out our podcast, From Poop to Gold. It's iTunes top 50 business podcast. We've had amazing guests on there, from Damon John to Jay Shetty and Russell Brunson and many other just amazing guests. If you want to actually dive in and learn how to do what we do and apply it to your business, check out Harman Brothers University. And if you just straight up want to work with us and see if there's some way that we can help you and your business out, just check out harmanbrothers.com. So several options there for you.
Love it. I'll link it in the show notes. Benton, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Hey everyone. Thank you so much for paying attention to that episode. Look, if you enjoyed it and you're looking to scale your business to the next level, or just a bit stuck, we've worked with businesses and helped scale them past 7 figures. So we know a little bit what it takes to grow your business. So if you're looking for a free strategy call with myself or a team member to help you and help get you unstuck or help scale your business, head on over to jportnoy.com and book a free strategy call. I'll see you then.